Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 22 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, and discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. We're back to basics here as Matt S. returns from his two-week-long hiatus, and we're joined by Brent Cassina, a.k.a. Dark Knight DK, to discuss some of the breaking comic book news of the week. We also read some listener comments and go completely insane, as always. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 22 of Comic Timing. We're back into the regular numbering now that episode 20 is out of the way. I am joined, as always, by the man from the land of beer. He is Matt S.
Hey, what's up?
Not much, Matt. What's going on with you?
Not too much, man. I was pretty disappointed. There's a rerun tonight of The Office, but other than that...
Yeah. Okay. Well, you gotta blame the World Series, man. Everybody's afraid to go against it.
Who's watching that crap?
Well, my dad in the other room, but other than that, I don't think anybody else in New York is, now that both New York teams are out. We're joined also by Brent Cassina, who is Dark Knight BK on the Comic Geek Speak forums and the various other forums associated with Comic Geek Speak. Brent, how are you?
It's good. I'm good. And I'm watching the World Series. Thank you very much. Where my Cardinals at, proudly.
Oh, snap. Well, hopefully they'll actually get the victories, man, because things are not looking too good for them tonight.
Hey, it's 3-2 in the bottom of 6. We got two men on, so it's looking pretty good right now.
And by the way, I'll throw in my little crossover tidbit. You know, Jenna Fisher is a big Cardinals fan. As well.
Really? Huh, how about that?
There you go.
There we go. There's the one bit of Office trivia there for you. And actually, before we get going with the actual episode, we have our first sponsor, and that, of course, is the New York Comic Con, so I want to give a little plug in for them here. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacobs Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit NewYorkComicCon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchases at NewYorkComicCon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need. So there's my little tidbit there. I'm actually going to be a part of the podcast arena at New York Comic Con as well. So
yep, fighting to the death against Comic Geek Speak.
Oh, definitely.
Two
yeah.
men enter, one man leave.
There can be only one comic podcast. Ian, I'm glad to hear that the New York Comic Con is kind of putting themselves together. They're bigger and better. I hear this year they're actually turning away twice as many people.
Actually, that's the case. This year they're going to be on a different floor of the Javits Center, so hopefully this year none of that bad stuff from last year is going to happen again, but we will wait and see. So
I wasn't involved. I didn't go to the show, but I mean, they actually have a lot of bad press from last year with the whole debacle and there not being enough space. the truth of the matter is, like, they, you know, to get that space, you got to book that so far in advance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And hopefully now they've mollified everyone. I know that everyone last year that didn't get in or got something to happen to them, they got like free passes for this year.
Yeah, well, I had a couple friends that were a bit annoyed because they weren't able to get in, but they're getting themselves the free passes. But I was one of the lucky ones that actually made it in last year, and it was a good convention, don't get me wrong. It's just that, you know, it was just way too small. But this year they're on the second floor as opposed to the bottom floor, and that one is actually the largest floor in the Javits Center. So a lot more space, a lot more room for dealers, and hopefully a lot more room for panels also. And nothing confirmed yet, but there might be a podcasting panel at the New York Comic Con. We're still up in the air about that, but who knows what's going to end up happening there. But thanks for the New York Comic Con for actually reaching out and, you know, actually getting the podcasters a part of this, even if it is called the Podcast Arena.
Well, they know that we all have like our 15 listeners that are out there. They might buy tickets if they live in the area. You never know.
It's certainly possible.
Underestimate the power of a sweaty fanboy.
Hey, well, actually, surprisingly enough, the smell wasn't too bad last year, so hopefully the bigger space won't mean that it'll smell any worse this year. That's the only thing I'm worried about.
Oh, let's not indulge in stereotypes now. Everyone's clean and well-groomed.
I know. Oh, yeah. Everyone.
Don't live with their mom.
Everyone. Right. Everyone.
They should get Axe to be a sponsor and hand out free cans to anybody that smells.
I think there was actually an anime convention that did that a couple of years back. They had one of the deodorant sponsors as one of the main sponsors of the show, but I don't know if they actually did it for Comic-Con. Anyway, we're just going to have a very laid-back episode tonight because, well, we're sort of a bit slow on that today, but we are going to have some big news that was breaking over this week. Specifically, the artist has been announced for Ultimate Spider-Man, and that, of course, is Stuart Immonen. We'll get into that as the show rolls on. Also,
is that
some,
how you say that name? I thought it was Immonen. But,
I've heard about eight different pronunciations. It's like Perez and Perez, man. I have no idea how the hell to pronounce this. Although it's not as bad as Millar. Or Miller or Mylar, whatever the
Mylar.
Hell you
mean, Mylar. I like Mylar.
Yeah, Mylar. That's I trademarked that, man. It's Mark Mylar from now on. Seriously, with that one episode we did about the Civil War delays. Ever since then, I've been calling him Mylar in my head. So yep. There you go.
Mark, also, 1/4 thickness Mylar.
Damn straight. Also, the fact that Wildcats number 2 has been resolicited, and let's see whether anybody cares at this point. Because hey, this just in: Jim Lee's late with another book. Wow, that's amazing. But we got plenty of other stuff here. Moon Knight might be coming to the world of television. We might have another villain in Spider-Man 3 by another. I mean, it seems like there just seems to be more and more every single week announced for this. So hopefully this is not nearly as true as it's, you know, supposedly, because it's a bit ridiculous to have 4 villains in one movie. That's just me.
It works for the Batman franchise. We can sure do it here.
Oh, yeah, it worked really well, especially with Bane. Bane was the most ridiculous part of that. They just used him as a throwaway, like, little goon guy, man.
That was, just remember that last one. That was pure gold. Batman, Batgirl, Robin, Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy,
Bane. Bat nipples.
Oh, it was everything you ever wanted in a film.
Oh, yeah, and George Clooney. How about that?
Exactly.
Hey, but George Clooney still says that he played Batman gay in that movie.
What?
Yeah, in a recent interview. He said he played Batman gay in Batman and Robin.
No way. There's no way. How big a part it was. There's no way. He's just saying that now so that we get off his back about it.
Eh, maybe it's possible, but hey. The man is, he says he's telling the truth. So whether that was the case then, I don't know, but now it's the case. He's saying that he played him
gay. He knows he mailed it in. He just doesn't want to live up to it.
Yeah, I got to go with that. No way.
Because he's actually kind of trying. I have it next to me. I kind of watched it the other day or something.
Oh,
you kind of watched it?
Well, I don't remember when I watched it, but I have watched it recently.
Oh, God. Yeah. And you made it all the way through?
I kind of watched it when it first came out, actually, in the theaters.
Did you have a Superman 4 followed by Batman and Robin viewing party? Because that would be interesting.
No, I haven't. But I actually was so bad, I listened to the commentary on that film.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like an hour and a half where Schumacher just apologizes, right?
He does apologize for it, actually. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, we've also got great stuff, like, speaking of Superman movies, the sequel to Superman Returns has been announced, and we have Next Wave ending as an ongoing series, but it will still have limited series to go with it. But let's start, actually, with the Ultimate Spider-Man news, as that one's kind of big here, and this was actually spoiled earlier in the week by Comic Book Resources, as Lying in the Gutters had it. You know, Rich Johnson from The Grave actually reported this, and that's just a little plug there for Dying in the Gutters, which is actually a really good CSI comic for that matter. So yeah, Stuart Immonen is the new artist on Ultimate Spider-Man. He's gonna be picking up once Mark Bagley or however the hell you pronounce it. I don't even know how to pronounce anything these days, man. It's Bagley. Okay, let's go Bagley, because these guys should, seriously, they just need to all be called Smith. That's it. You know, they can have their first name, whatever they want. Their last name has to be Smith, because just actually pronouncing them.
We can just call them current artist and future artist. Leave it at that.
There you go. There you go. That works perfectly there. But
give them numbers like presidents. 41, 43.
Issue 75.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Or with, you know, like with Galactica, you could just, you know, give them about 4 names and just keep repeating them over and over again. There you go. But with issue number 111, that is going to be Stuart Immonen's first issue on this. And he's no stranger to the Ultimate Universe with his Ultimate X-Men work. And he also did some Ultimate Fantastic Four for a while with Warren Ellis, his partner on Next Wave. But now we've got him teaming with Bendis for what I believe is the first time. I could be wrong on this, although I forget who was actually writing Ultimate X-Men at the time of Immonen, but I don't think that was Bendis. I could be wrong.
I think it was Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh, it was Vaughan?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. There we go. Yeah, well, what do you guys think about the Immonen going to Ultimate Spider-Man as, I mean, he does have a very different art style than what Bagley brought to the table the first time around.
Well, that's the question. The question is which Stuart Immonen is going to show up for the work, because I'm more familiar with him from some of his other DC stuff. You look at, like, Superman's Secret Identity, that's a totally different artist than the guy Next Wave right now.
Yeah.
So Next Wave, to me, that art style, I don't think that would work for a Spider-Man book. I love the stuff that he did, you know, with the Superman, that miniseries. So, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Well, he has done some Spider-Man stuff in the past. And, I mean, these are just some random issues here and there. And even with that, he displayed a very, very different style. He's one of those guys that can really, you know, manipulate his style to whatever book he's on.
Well, I may be wrong, but that stuff that they showed is from, like, 10 years ago, I think.
I know.
Five or something, that he did some story for Marvel Magazine or something. Some weird-ass thing like that.
Spider-Man Magazine number 4 from 1996. Talk about ridiculous, man. Jeez. I had no idea Spider-Man Magazine even existed until they actually mentioned it in this Newsarama article, because, oh my god. He did a What If story also a while ago. What if Peter Parker had to invent Spider-Man? I have no idea.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
didn't he invent Spider-Man?
I guess he invented some sort of Spider-Man robot? I don't know.
That's not a What If story. That's a true life story.
That's a What Happened story.
A Spider-Man Gen 13 crossover in 1996 he did, and he also did Spider-Man Unlimited number 6. That's what he's done so far with Spider-Man. And Ultimate Spider-Man outsells Amazing Spider-Man every single month, so they're going to really have to have decent art on this to actually make it continue. But you've still got Bendis' stories on it, so that's a plus.
I'm interested what it would look like if he did it in his current style, that kind of angular stuff he's doing on Next Wave.
I don't know. I don't know if that would really work too well with Spider-Man, though.
Or
well,
the Ultimate X-Men, if he did it that way. Isn't that what he's doing on Next Wave now?
Yeah. No. The Ultimate X-Men was a bit different than what he did on Next Wave. It was a bit more washed out, I think it was. But what were you going
to
say, Matt?
You know, I wanted to go back and actually talk about the series itself.
Sure.
Because, I mean, we can sit here and just speculate all day. We don't know what's going to happen with it, and we don't really know what his style is going to be, and we don't really know anything about that. But I still find it kind of baffling and strange that Mark Bagley's become this guy who's like, you know, he's the definitive Spider-Man artist.
I thought John Romita Jr. was the definitive.
He's the god
Spider-Man
on it. Well, if you read that Newsarama article, you know, they just go kind of mental over this. But
well, of course, yeah.
But I mean, my point is that I don't know, man. Bagley to me has always been one of those guys that's just like, you know, he's a solid workhorse. He's just like, he's not a superstar. He goes in kind of with those B-level creators that are really, they're solid and they do their job every week, but they're just not superstars. And again, remember, this is the guy who got his job because he won the Marvel tryout book challenge back in the day. And he
used to do Warriors
and all those other kind of books. And I find it interesting that in the last, like, about 10 years or so, ever since he started doing this series, that, you know, for some people, he's just taken on this really crazy status as this great fan-favorite penciler.
Well, you know what it is? It's the fact that he can put out about 18 issues a year. You know, that's something that you do not find in every single artist. And the fact is that his quality hasn't really gone down with the output he's been doing. You know, he can just churn them out, while you've got some artists that can barely put out 4 issues a year, let alone 18.
Like I said, he's got one of those art styles that just, like I said, it harkens back to me to the 80s or the really early 90s before the big speculator and image boom, because, you know, I mean, he kind of ranks up there with me with those other guys, kind of like Tom Grummett or, you know, those other sort of not superstar guys, but they're just really solid, dependable, decent artists. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's just that longevity or that style that he has that allows him to draw the way that he does.
I think it really is just the longevity. I mean, the fact that, you know, the guy just puts out solid work, and that's what we need in this industry.
Let's clone him.
Yeah, there you go. But you know, he was a part of the Clone Saga back in the old days, so, you know, who knows? He's been a part of 2 Clone Sagas now when you think about it, because they're doing the Clone Saga now and Ultimate Spider-Man, so maybe he can be cloned. Maybe that's the point here. But just the fact that we need more solid artists. You know, screw the whole superstar angle.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Rob Liefeld's a superstar. Big whoop. You know, I hate his art. I've said
Rob
that time
Liefeld
and time again.
Rob Liefeld is not a superstar anymore, I'm sorry
no.
to say.
He still thinks
he is. How about 95? I don't think he has been.
Yeah.
But you know what? Because that's the thing. You say that, but Mark Bagley is an anomaly in the comic industry because most people, let's face it, people don't care about dependability. If Civil War, the delay of Civil War taught us anything, was really that people, we're at a point right now where fandom, generally by and large, doesn't care if someone does a book on time or not. They don't care if an artist takes 2 months or whatever to draw an issue because they've shown that they'll still buy it and they'll still be waiting in line for it. I don't know. I guess I definitely respect Bagley's workmanship, I guess, his stick-to-itness, his deadline meeting ability. I definitely respect that. I don't know. I wonder what else it is about this guy, because it generally doesn't seem to be the norm that everyone, you know, most people don't really appreciate that kind of more simple art style and other thing these days.
Well, they flock to Jim Lee, and they're going to flock to who's on Civil War.
McNiven,
they flock to them. They're going to flock to the art style, whatever looks the coolest and, you know, better than the last year's art style, and they're going to flock to that more than who can put out issues, and that's why we're getting all this lateness and stuff. Like, Joe Quesada on Newsarama was talking about his Daredevil Father that's coming out in 3 weeks or whatever, and he said it's not an epidemic, but really it is, because they're not hiring dependable artists, they're hiring these superstar artists.
Oh, yeah, sure, and Daredevil Father number 6 is coming out, okay?
When did the first one come out?
It came out at least 5 years ago. I mean, this is, or maybe 3 years ago. I don't even know at this point. All I know is that it was ages ago, and it really even shouldn't bother to come out at this point because nobody cares anymore.
It's like Spider-Man Black Cat in it.
We'll see, man. But you know what, though? Let me bring this. Let's back it up a little bit, because this is one of the questions that we have now. Now, we look at somebody that, you know, an artist that takes more than a month to draw a book. And for some of us, our inclination is to say, well, they're lazy, or they're doing something, or they don't have this kind of work ethic.
Yeah.
What I think, and you look at, like, McNiven, or you look at these other guys that are drawing these crazy-ass, really super detailed art style. Let's face it. I mean, you could spend 8 hours a day, you know, the whole month drawing in this really super detailed art style, and you might not be able to finish a book in 22, you know, whatever days or however many days that you have that you're supposed to have this thing done. And that's kind of the thing, I guess, with Bagley. You know, like I said, he has an art style that is, he's capable of doing that art style in the time that he's allotted each month.
Mm-hmm.
Other artists, you know, are just, they put in so much detail, you know, every single little blade of grass, and then color the hell out of these things and all these different, you know, is it too much? Do we need that super detailed art style, or can someone with a simpler art style really survive these days?
It really depends on the book, because when you look at something like Ultimate Spider-Man, this is a book that needs that simple style to me. I mean, had you come out of the bat and had this, you know, very, very stylized style that, you know, was incredibly detailed, was almost like the point where, you know, it was absolutely gorgeous, nobody would be able to ape it ever. And I'm thinking actually the lines of Ultimates right now, because even though, you know, we're getting this Jeff Loeb and Joe Madd era that's going to be taking over for the, you know, the previous era of Miller and why am I blanking on his name at this point?
Hitch.
Hitch, there you go, Brian Hitch. You know, that's a style that you're never really going to be able to
escape,
repeat,
or
repeat.
That's totally,
you know,
just 180 degrees from one another.
Sure. Yeah,
and
I mean, here with
to
Spider-Man,
follow Madier or whatever.
Yeah, it's totally different styles. With something like Ultimate Spider-Man, however, you're getting art that's consistent, you know, a bit less detailed than, you know, what you get out of Brian Hitch, far from anywhere near as detailed as something that you get out of Brian Hitch, but it fits Spider-Man. And it's the sort of art that you got in the early days of Spider-Man, which is another reason why that, you know, keeping Bagley on the book as long as you have, along with Bendis, works so well, because you had over 100 issues that just looked and felt perfect. And now you'll have Amonin on, and hopefully he'll be able to feel perfect, too. Who
is knows? He able to put out 12 books a year?
Amonin? Yeah. No, he can definitely put out 12 books a year. Okay. 16 or 18 like Bagley was doing? No way.
Well, nobody's asking for 16 or 18. We're just lucky that we got him. I mean, exactly. Wasn't it coming out every 2 weeks at one point? Ultimate Spider-Man?
It was. On a regular basis for a while, yeah. Yeah, no, Bagley, and he's even said, I listened to the interview we had on Comic Geekspeak a couple weeks back, and, you know, he only works about, I think he said, like, about 6 to 8 hours a day on his art, really, but he looks at it as it more as a hobby slash passion, and because of that, he's able to, like, churn out page after page after page. You know, it's not like a chore to him, it's fun, and that's why he's able to do it so fast, so maybe we'll get the same thing out of Amonin, who knows.
Now, didn't he say then that he didn't want to do Ultimate Spider-Man at the beginning? He thought it was going to be like some stupid thing. I can't believe that.
Well, you know what, though? But let's talk about that, because let's face it, the simple fact that this book is successful and is more successful than Amazing Spider-Man, to me, that's simple. That just kind of signifies that there's something wrong with Marvel Comics in the way they're going right now. Because, you know, the whole Ultimates line, I mean, let's be honest, the idea of retelling the same old stories again in a separate universe on the surface, that sounds like a really stupid idea.
Yeah.
And Marvel has tried things like that many times, and they've always usually failed.
Sure.
And flopped.
Yeah.
And even a lot of the other Ultimate books are just not as successful. Why? And again, is that book so successful simply because of the singular vision that we've had with one artist and one creator? What can Marvel learn from that book that they should be doing with their main Spider-Man titles?
One writer on and one artist. I think that's exactly it. They've had the same artist and the same writer for so long. It has been a great book. I mean, it harkens back to the old Thor run. Walt Simonson did, like, how many issues? They need to do that on every single book. I were running Marvel Comics or DC Comics, you would have to do a 28-book minimum on a title. You're not going to jump on for 6 issues. You're going to do at least 28 or something, you know, 2 years, and then you can get off.
Most people, you know, they don't do that anymore. I don't know when they stopped or when that kind of, you know, stopped happening, but really, we're at a point now, more or less, where it's just, you know, you get a hot creative team and you book them for 12 issues, maybe.
Yeah.
And then they're gone. And a lot of creators, they don't want to do the same book, you know.
It's Miller syndrome, really. Well, I mean, Miller has that, you know, idea of, yeah, I'm totally going to do this. And then
tell one story and then leave.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's it. I mean, come on, with Marvel Knights Spider-Man. There's not even a Marvel Knights Spider-Man anymore, because Mark Miller did it for 12 issues. And after that, the book, to put it lightly, was terrible. It was absolutely awful. It wasn't even that good during Miller's run, in my opinion.
No, actually,
I mean, the art was great.
I read Marvel Knights Spider-Man after that ended and had the McNiven covers. I actually kind of liked that, because it had Spider-Man in the Avengers Tower.
Okay.
It wasn't that bad. But they introduced some, like, Sentry character, but it really wasn't a Sentry. I think he was a Skrull. It was really weird at the end.
Yeah. Well, also, you've got the fact that the reason why I feel that Spider-Man has really been so great for Ultimate Spider-Man is the fact that there's less baggage involved. And that's another problem, because there's just so much continuity involved with the Amazing Spider-Man and the Marvel U Spider-Man, period. You've got a simple Spider-Man here. Simple art, simple story, simply fun.
I don't agree with you.
That's what it is to
okay,
me.
Every issue builds its own continuity. I mean, now there are 110 issues into it already.
Let's look at the continuity of Amazing Spider-Man. Okay, he's Peter Parker. You have Mary Jane comes in. Gwen Stacy dies. Gwen Stacy's dad dies. Aunt May dies or something. I mean, what has happened in Ultimate Spider-Man? Mary Jane's come in. Gwen Stacy's dead. We have Venom. We have Carnage. We're doing the Clone Saga again. He's hitting all the main points. I don't think it's a continuity thing. I think it's storytelling quality.
But he's doing it simpler, though. That's the problem. I mean, that's what I'm seeing for me. You know, I mean, he's not doing it over, you know, 30, 40 years. He's been able to cut these storylines down to the past. When did this start? 98, I think it was? Or
it's 2001.
2001. Okay, there we go. 2001. So it's been 5 years. That's it. In 5 years, he was able to do what took 30 years in Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's already had 30 years of Spider-Man stories to pull from. He's just picking what he likes, and then he can write great stories from me. I mean, he's doing great work, but he's not doing anything that hard.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, though, he's picking the right stories. And that's another reason why people, I think, are going to Ultimate Spider-Man week after week. Because, well, and literally is week after week with Bagley on art, but it's going to be month after month now. But.
You know, I got to be honest with you, because that's one of the things that initially why I never jumped on board with that book is just the fact that it seemed to me like that they were just going over again and just retelling the same stories that I'd already read before. You know, multiple times. Now, obviously, there's a different spin on it, and the characters are always generally redesigned, and there's different twists and turns and other kind of things like that involved. So, again, you know, I read about the first 5 or 6 issues, and I kind of gave up on it, so maybe I should go back one of these days.
They're all out in trade.
That Spider-Man revealing his identity to Mary Jane in what was it, like the 13th issue, I think that really changed the differentiation between Amazing Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man, because that just added a whole new layer to it. And then now I think he's pulling more away from the old stories and making his new ones. I mean, Carnage is Gwen Stacy back alive again or something? Or what's going on with that? I think he's going to go further
spoilers,
and further
by the
away.
Way. Spoilers.
Oh, that's so old.
No, I know.
Carnage is Gwen Stacy? Oh, you got to be kidding me. I'm sorry.
Okay, no. It's a lot more complicated than that, and it's pretty damn different than that. So you're just going to have to go in and actually read it.
I just looked at it in the comic shop. I didn't actually read it, so that's not really a spoiler.
All right, yeah. Although, also at the same time, yeah, because that's not exactly how the story went. So it's not even close to that when you're reading it. So go into the comic shop, read it full through, and you actually understand that story arc a bit more. It's not just straight up, oh no, he made Gwen Stacy Carnage. Spoilers. Oh no, you know. But it's a bit different than that.
Yeah.
Or even what he's doing with the parents now. That's pretty different.
Yeah, well, he's doing a whole bunch of different ideas with that, especially with the father. This is stuff that again, if you want to pick up Ultimate Spider-Man, you'll learn about it a lot more. It definitely has its own feel. It's definitely becoming its own book, as opposed to just being the same old, all over again.
So doesn't that just confuse the marketplace to have these two totally separate storylines with these two totally different books, but they're the same character?
I don't think
it
would.
Confuse the fact that one's better than the other.
It's not confusing because they had Mark Bagley on it, and every time you saw a piece of Mark Bagley Spider-Man art for the past 5 years, you've known it's Ultimate Spider-Man, and it goes along with, you know, all the other things that have happened, whereas Spider-Man now, I mean, who's been on it? Deodato Jr., Romita Jr., who was on it now? You see, I can't even remember what's happened the last 5 years.
Garney.
Can't remember what's happened the last 5 years because there's so many different artists.
And yet it's all been JMS, and that's why I don't pick up Amazing Spider-Man anymore.
The first arc was good. I like that one.
The first arc was really good, but it's I like to call it JMS syndrome, because he does a really great first arc that introduced plenty of great ideas, and then after that, it just really goes off the hinge. And that's a problem that they have with Amazing Spider-Man right now. They need a new writer in there so that it can possibly be as good as Ultimate Spider-Man, and maybe they'll get the numbers back up.
I mean, is it just simply the fact that people don't want to see middle-aged Spider-Man living in Avengers Tower?
I don't think that's the case.
I like that storyline, though.
Yeah,
I haven't been reading as long, but I kind of like that idea. So
it's the way they treat him in the book. That's the problem, because a lot of the ideas that they've been introducing, not the whole Avengers stuff, but even before that, the whole Ezekiel stuff was interesting for about the first 5 minutes, and then the whole Spider-Man the Other stuff.
God.
Spider-Man the Other was just dreadful.
I wish I had not bought that every week.
Yeah. The only parts that were good were the Peter David parts, but even then, you could tell Peter David was like, wait a minute, why am I stuck being a part of this? You know, he would have been so much better off writing his own Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man and just not being a part of the Other. But literally, the minute he came onto the book, he was writing it as part of the Other. And that's all he could really do there.
I should have dropped it when I saw Pat Lee's art on the second book that came out.
That wasn't really Pat Lee. Nothing's ever really Pat Lee. Come on. Pat Lee hasn't drawn his own books in about 10 years.
This is what I'm trying to get at, though, with that question, is the fact that you have one book. You have Ultimate Spider-Man that's selling better than the main actual Spider-Man title. So my question is this then. For what lesson or what mistakes should Marvel learn from to fix their main Spider-Man title? Is the reason why people like Ultimate so much more, is it because that he's a younger, still in high school, that kind of thing? Is that part of it, why people like it more? They don't necessarily like it where, you know, the adult stories just don't seem to be that interesting, because I've heard people make that criticism before. Other stuff, I mean, obviously we have three or four different titles running each month that all usually end up tying in together, which creates a huge hassle if you're trying to follow a storyline. And I mean, that's another thing for Ultimate Spider-Man, is that, again, you know, you buy one book a month and you're getting everything there is to know about that character.
Ultimate Spider-Man is really its own standalone book, really. I think of it. Each Ultimate book is its own standalone book, and then sometimes they tie into each other. I think that's why it's more popular, because if you read Amazing Spider-Man now, you're not going to understand what's going on.
That's what I mean. Do they need to go back to that? Is that something that they should be trying to focus on? Because they never will do that. They never seem to ever come to that conclusion.
Well, there's the reason why the Superman books are pretty much, they're telling their own stories now. You know, they don't really cross over nearly as much as they used to anymore. Well, post Infinite Crisis, and even before then, you know, take Infinite Crisis out of the equation with Superman books. Most of them tell their own individual stories about Superman. So you don't have to worry about picking up one, you know, Action Comics to pick up Superman. You know, that's it. With Spider-Man, That's the problem. They've been crossing over into all the books way too often, and you know every story is connected. Some people just want a one shot, or at the same time they want a story that just goes through just Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, if you're crossing over to all the books, then you really should have had one writer write four books, and then the next story have like the second writer write those four books. Not what they did with the other, but have it be separate storylines.
Exactly, yeah. And also, another thing that I wanted to mention is that actually tying into a previous episode that we had here on Comic Timing about, whether or not comics are aging or not, I feel that the older reader is going to pick up Amazing Spider-Man. The younger reader is going to pick up Ultimate Spider-Man. And that's the problem, because the older reader might like an Amazing Spider-Man where Spider-Man is older and, in college or through his college years or, is a teacher now and is married, but a younger Spider-Man fan is going to pick up Ultimate Spider-Man because you've got a younger character that you can relate to. So it's all about relation. The older readers are going to relate to an older Spider-Man. The younger readers are going to relate to a younger Spider-Man.
That could be true, but that's not going along with what you said. You said Ultimate Spider-Man outsells Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
That's not true, but because there's not more younger fans than there are older fans. Fans are picking up both.
Well, yeah, older fans are picking up both. However, the younger fans that would pick up a book are going to pick up Ultimate Spider-Man ahead of that. Its trades sell incredibly well in Borders and Barnes & Noble and all that. Amazing Spider-Man, however, not even close.
Isn't that just the fact that you can buy them all and they're all available? Actually, if you look at the Ultimate Spider-Man trades, I mean, they're almost like manga right now, where you can just go into the bookstore and they're labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, mm-hmm. 6. I mean, you can't go into a bookstore and pick up, give me Amazing Spider-Man volume, you can get the essentials, I guess, but you can't go in there and say, well, where do I start? Where do I come from? And then you have all these crossovers and tie-ins and different artists and all these kind of different things, and it's definitely, from a mass market perspective, I mean, it's just a mess.
All right, but if you're 7 and you're walking into the comic store and you don't ask the comic store guy what's good for you, and you go up to the wall and you see the new books, you're going to see Amazing Spider-Man, Sensational Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man, whatever else they got, and you'll get maybe, and if you're a huge Spider-Man fan at 7 years old, you're going to get one or two, and that's just going to be which cover applies to you. So, can't really say that with younger readers unless they go in and ask the comic attendant, or the comic attendant says, here, try this.
Well, by younger readers also, I was thinking more around like the teenage 14. Years as opposed to, like 14, 15, something like that. 7-year-olds, however, that's usually the parents that are doing that. Hopefully it's the parents. Let's put it that way. I mean, if they're just going into a Borders and saying, what's good, and they go and pick something up, that's a bit ridiculous. But I'm hoping
like
that the parents...
impression there that you had, but that was good.
Thank you. But at the same time, you're hoping that these guys are going to pick up something that would feel like, it's better for them. And, well, a 7-year-old might be drawn to an Ultimate Spider-Man because guess what? Even those covers are more appealing because they all have a similar feel to them. They all have a similar style to them. Amazing Spider-Man, every cover looks different, especially the trades.
Man, I'm not a big fan of those painted Bailey covers that they have on those trades. But that is one of the big things, though. Again, I think that has a much more easy approach to selling to the casual mass market audience just simply because it's new and it's been traded in a uniform trade format since it began. I mean, that is, again, why is manga so successful right now? I think that's part of the reason that you can just walk in there and look on the shelf, and there it is, 1, 2, 3, all the way down. You got what you need to know. You pick it up, and you're good.
But that's not saying that you can't jump into Amazing Spider-Man. You could pick up that first Straczynski trade, jump right in, and understand what's going on. You would have no problem.
Well, that's true, but it doesn't, I mean, look, I'm a guy that started reading comics in the 80s. I mean, the talk of having trades, that to me, that was a joke when I first started collecting comics. There weren't any trades. There was, one or two big event things like Dark Knight Returns or Watchmen. But, you just started and you read. And there was footnotes, editorial footnotes in there that told you where to look at other books and other things. And I agree with you that I don't think people are stupid. I don't think that you need to have every single issue to understand a storyline. It's a lot easier to start with something like Ultimate Spider-Man that is clearly labeled. Now, the thing is with talking about older versus younger readers and different things, I don't, I'm 35. I've been reading Spider-Man, again, since the 80s, and it used to be one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. And I have not been able to buy a Spider-Man book that I have liked probably for the last 10 years. I'm in a weird place where I don't want to go back. I don't want to reboot everything. But at the same time, I don't really like what they're doing with the character now.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of kind of stuck, I guess, in the middle.
Well, pick up Friendly Neighborhood, because that's been amazing so far with Peter David, minus the other. Don't pick up his other issues, but he's been doing a lot more of the one-shot type thing. He's been doing more of a Spider-Man that, you know, young and old can relate to. Just those fun, exciting Spider-Man issues. And also, best of all, for me at least, because I was a huge fan of Young Justice, the previous arc that just happened with Mysterio, Todd Nauck does the art on it. So Peter David plus Todd Nauck for me is a book to pick up.
Actually, you know what, though? This is kind of funny. I'm not, again, I guess for me, Friendly Neighborhood, I don't go towards that book just because I don't get along with Peter David all that well most of the time. But I've been more impressed lately the last few months with the Sensational Spider-Man.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
It's really been taking an old school feel and a lot of, like, classic villains showing up every issue. And,
who's writing that these days?
If they can only get rid of that
Sakasa
goddamn costume, okay. I would really be.
Which is getting there. It's getting there. I know,
but it's taking just way too long.
Yeah, I like it. It's going to be back in black, baby.
I like the gold costume. I'm sorry.
You should be sorry.
Oh, God. The only place that gold costume has ever looked good is on my New York Comic Con shirt. That's it. Okay? Literally, that's the only time I've actually really enjoyed the outfit is on that shirt that Quesada designed.
You know what? I'm sorry. Again, the costume's not that bad in and of itself. I mean, it's pretty lame. It ranks right up there with sort of like the Scarlet Spider ripped up hoodie costume.
But how different is the gold Spider-Man from the black Spider-Man costume? It's got a big spider on it. That's it. Yeah, different colors.
One's simplistic and one has three arms.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I was just going to say that, Ian. Actually, that is the killer for me, that you have a freaking spider that has seven arms.
It's ridiculous.
That's really dumb. But anyway.
But if they didn't have the arms, would you be more of a fan of it, though?
I would think better of it, yes, I would.
Yeah. And so would I, tell you the truth, because I think those three arms are just so freaking ridiculous, and they don't even look right on his back. No artist has been able to draw that properly yet. It's just they're just sort of hanging there.
They don't really do much. Just on the covers.
Okay. All right. Well, that sort of explains something too, if they're not really using it too much. But to go from the idea of the book that comes out, you know, like 18 times a year, to a book that can't even come out once a year.
Batman and Robin.
Speaking of Batman and Robin, one of the guys who's actually the World Storm event is pretty much screwed at this point, because one of its major books, Wildcats, is going to be delayed 5 months until March. The first issue just got released this past, like, about 2 weeks ago, and you're not seeing another one until March. If you thought the Civil War delays were bad, it's gotten much worse now. And should Jim Lee just stop drawing at this point?
Yes.
Wow, look at that.
I think he should have stopped drawing about 5 years ago, to tell you the truth.
No.
Okay.
Hush was great.
All right, you know what? I'll give you that. And
okay,
I think
Hush was great because he started that early to ensure that he would actually be on time.
Then he should
everything
do that with all of his books. Then.
Since then has just been, a horrible problem. You know, I get this. Now, he's a businessman. He's a guy that's in charge of a company, and he's got other responsibilities. You know, just step back. Just say you can't do it. Just don't do it. You know, he's already supposedly, been working on Batman and Robin. Who the
last one came out in July, didn't it? Or
June? All right. So he's still backed up on that.
When Frank Miller is out producing you, that's when you know that something's wrong.
Yes.
He's still backed up on that. And like you said before, you know, we know he's involved in working on the DC Massively Multiplayer Online Role-Playing Game. Sorry, I try to get that out as fast as possible.
There we go.
Just call it MMO. And
whatever his relationship is with that game, I don't really know. I don't know if it's ever come out exactly what he's doing. But then again, to start this whole company-wide, you know, if anything, he's going to focus on. I mean, this is his baby. The Wildstorm universe, absorbed into DC for good or bad. And this is him. This is his stuff. This is his flagship title he left Marvel Comics to work on. The formed image to produce is Wildcats. And, I mean, I don't know. If you don't have your heart in it, if you're not really ready to go behind it, if you're going to have this huge event tying in with it, I don't see how you get yourself into that kind of situation.
Go
ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you want to be a part of it and you know that you're not going to be able to, commit to doing the full art, do the breakdowns. It works for Keith Giffen. Just have somebody finish it for you, I mean, if you're not going to be able to do the whole damn thing, don't commit to it.
Or just hire one of those 25 guys that you used to hire back in the Image days to draw just like you.
That shows how much he cares about his baby that he can put it off for 5 months.
Yeah.
Well, but it's worth the wait, damn it. Come on. Let's go back. Remember when everyone was saying, oh, you're just a bitch because you can't wait for Civil War. Well, here you go. It's worth
Civil
the War's wait.
Civil War is a completely different animal, though.
Because Civil War pushed back so many other titles. Wildstorm does not push back 10 titles or whatever.
Oh, it does. Yeah. That whole Worldstorm event, that gets pushed back.
I don't think they're actually pushing it back.
It's not
I think
an
the
event.
Wildcat story is just going to be, doing about 5 months
later. 5 months in the future. Here you go.
Instead of 1 year later, they'll do 5 months later.
Being sarcastic for the most part. But,
they could put out a Wildcats miniseries, The Missing 5 Months,
There we go. Brilliant. Oh, God. And, I mean, you've got Morrison on this title also. I mean, you think it's gold when you have Grant Morrison and Jim Lee on a title together. But well,
I wonder what he thinks
produce,
about this whole thing.
Well, he's still trying to do Seven Soldiers, so.
Hey, that's done. That's done.
Oh, really? Wow, great. Terrific. Did he do that by himself, or did somebody ghostwrite for him? That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't know whether that was him or J.H. Williams that took so long in that last book. I don't know.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Not reading it, so I can't put an opinion on it.
I was going to read it, but I recently ordered it online, I think, because I'm not going to pay the full price for it. But.
It sounded like too much of a hassle. I mean, I already did the Infinite Crisis 4 issues, 4 miniseries. I was not going to do 7 4-issue miniseries.
But still, I mean, when you talk about this, I mean, a guy who does, simple classic style art could be doing Wildcats right now, but you got to go flashy with Jim Lee. And even if it is his baby, well, Youngblood's been delayed about 12,000 times and nobody cares about Rob Liefeld anymore. It's going to get to the point where Jim Lee, you're just not going to care about it because it's going to be laid off the start, like a joke aside of him.
I didn't care about Wildcats to begin with, so Shoji Mahachi, I cared.
Yeah. And I was, like I said, I was around the first time this all happened.
Yeah.
And, I have the first issue polybagged in my parents' basement, probably somewhere, with 5 other copies, I think, that I purchased.
Brilliant.
For my investment. these are properties, these are characters that I simply just don't care about anymore.
Yeah.
They were on the right track. I mean, what are they doing? They're taking top writers in the industry and putting them on these books.
Yeah.
And that should have been, if anything was going to get people to be more excited about the books, that would have been the way to do it.
Sure. They went especially about Gail Simone on Gen 13. I mean, come on, that's a brilliant choice right there.
They went about it the right way. This is just kind of stupid, the fact that this is happening at all. But I don't know. If it doesn't affect really any of the other books, then I guess it doesn't really matter to anybody except the few, however many people that bought the book or pre-ordered it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, also, when you think about it, McNiven and Civil War, people already read Marvel Comics. For a while now, Wildstorm Comics, specifically stuff like Wildcats, hasn't really been selling too well. Yeah, just Ex Machina, basically, and that's it. They were trying to, bring the ball back in their court here, and, well, they just threw it, out of bounds. That's it. It's completely
over. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're trying for a major relaunch of your properties, it seems like a really stupid-ass thing to do.
So I hope that Jim Lee has learned a lesson now. Mr. Businessman should probably stay in the business corps.
I'm sure he's learning his lesson, sleeping on his pile of money and sleeping with his cadre of women. I'm sure he's feeling really bad about this.
He'll never be executive editor of anything other than Wildstorm if he can't run his own show, right?
I very much hope that at least there's some people out there who get this reference I'm about to make, but would you like to stay for dinner? We're eating money. Okay, there we
crickets,
go.
But, crickets.
Yeah, over the
yes,
head.
Yes, exactly. No, I somebody who's listening got that reference. Somebody. Somewhere is saying, wow, I can't believe Ian just said that.
And they're turning off the podcast now.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. All right, we got some other news here that we want to get into. Well, here's one that is a bit interesting that I want to say whether or not, just to go with the Spider-Man thing one last time here. Spider-Man 3, it's sort of been confirmed, but not entirely, that Bruce Campbell is going to play Quentin Beck in Spider-Man 3. Now, considering he's already played 2 other people in Spider-Man, I mean, what's the deal with him playing Quentin Beck now? And better yet, he better not show up as Mysterio, because 4 villains would be really, really way too much.
I think it could be possible if he's Quentin Beck, because you could just say Quentin Beck was a wrestling announcer, and then he hopped from job to job until that movie came out.
And then he was an usher in the theater.
Yeah. And now he's a whatever he is in this film. So,
Movie special effects expert. Wasn't that always what he was supposed to be?
Exactly.
That was his night job. There you go.
Okay.
Well, they're saying that apparently he's going to appear in a scene where Peter Parker finds out that they're making a Spider-Man movie. And Sam Raimi is apparently going to appear in that, as is Avi Arad. And that's where Bruce Campbell's supposed to show up. I hope that that part is not true, because that is way too hokey.
They're ripping off
talking
Ultimate
about
Spider-Man
that
there.
Yeah.
That was real. That sounds, just on the surface, it sounds like about the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It's something somebody made up. They would not stoop so low to rip something out of Ultimate Spider-Man, which is basically ripping off them. They're like ripping off themselves now.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Bruce Campbell, by the way, I saw Evil Dead the Musical over the weekend. fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Was Bruce actually
Campbell in it?
No, he's not in it, but it's in his style, let's put it that way. They got a guy who looks just like him to play the role, and it is absolutely terrific. If you live in the New York area, go see Evil Dead the movie. They reference Army of Darkness and Evil Dead and a whole bunch of stuff in there, and it's just, oh my god, it's hilarious all the way through.
Any Bubba Hotep references?
Surprisingly not. I was looking for one.
Have you seen that? That was pretty good.
I saw bits and pieces of it. I've never seen the full thing.
Yeah, I saw it in theater when it first came out.
Oh my god.
That's too far.
Yeah, a black JFK in a wheelchair and Elvis Presley. Oh my god.
If you're a comics fan, it's so far out, you could still appreciate it. You might like it.
But could you see Bruce Campbell playing Mysterio in, say, Spider-Man 4 or 5 or 8 or 12?
Yes, but not in 3.
Okay.
Again, we were talking about this before we started to record that, you know, they've done this before. They put in Professor Connors just name and person only in the first two movies, and he has not really played any part in the film. He's not become the Lizard. He's not done anything else like that. You know, if they drop him in there with the name and a really throwaway kind of role, then it doesn't matter. But it's like you said, my main concern is the fact that we have Venom, we've got Eddie Brock, we've got the symbiote Hulk costume. We got to go through that whole thing where he gets it and then loses it. And then Venom comes along. We've got Gwen Stacy being introduced. We have the Sandman playing a part. I mean, I don't want it to be Batman and Robin.
Again. I don't want it to be Batman and Robin either.
We don't need Mr. Freeze and all that stuff with five villains and crazy, you know, 18 Bat characters and stuff in here. I trust Sam Raimi a lot. Spider-Man 2 is probably my favorite superhero movie ever. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, so I hope that this is just a bad rumor.
I think it's going to be just like the Kurt Connors thing. It's going to be in the movie. If you didn't know about it before and you're a Spider-Man fan, you're going to jump up and say, oh, wow, and then it's going to end. Mm-hmm. They're going to move on from there.
Hopefully. Let's put it that way. Hopefully. And, I mean, well, for all we know, we could have Sam Raimi doing a couple more Spider-Man films after this. So maybe he's just setting himself up to do, you know, Spider-Man 4 with Mysterio and the Lizard. Who knows?
But, you mean, honestly, why is this on the internet? It's because Bruce Campbell is like he's not a well-known actor, but he's known in some circles, and everybody was, because he did such a good job in cameos in the first two, they're all wondering what he's going to do in this film. So that's the only reason why this came up. So,
you know why?
Because really
he's the jack of all trades. He's the jack of all trades. That's why.
Have you read any of his books? Well, is he really that good?
He's the jack of one trade. I think he plays the same character in every movie, actually.
I was actually just making a reference to the TV show he was on called Jack of All Trades.
Oh,
but
so you're
the only one that watched it.
Yeah. Hey, that and Cleopatra 2525, back-to-back in syndication.
Yeah. Maybe you could work in a Briscoe County Jr. reference in there while you're at it. You got that?
That was just you, Ian. All you.
Oh, man. I was watching, I wasn't watching, but we were talking about Young Indiana Jones over the weekend, some of my friends and I. So we've been talking about everything lately, so that's why everything's in my head at the same time here. But speaking of movies that are getting sequels, Superman Returns sequel, so Superman Returns will return for a second movie.
So in other words, we're going to see Superman 2 all over again.
Super grandchild.
Yeah, well, they're saying it's going to be, you know, one of the best Superman villains everyone's been quote-unquote waiting to see. If it's Zod, I'll be annoyed. I'll be incredibly annoyed because you've been there before, all right? Give us Brainiac or somebody that, you know, you haven't seen in the movies before.
Can we name Superman's villains on two hands? We can only
Superman
name
really
his
doesn't
best
have
villains
any
on
great
one hand.
Villains besides
Lex Luthor is his best villain. That's it.
Yeah.
You know who I know? I have the scoop right here. I'm telling you who it's going to be. The villain for that Superman film. No, it's going to be Mr. Mitzel Pitlick.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, there you go. Mixel Pitlick and the Prankster.
Let's Bat-Mite. Kill the franchise before it begins, you know.
You know, I think they've already done that. Because to tell you the truth, I liked the first... See, this is where you get all complicated. Yeah. I liked Superman Returns, but not as much as I should have. Because it was so slavishly dedicated to redoing the whole first movie all over again with the same dialogue, same plot line, same almost everything else. Give me something new, man. Like I said, I don't want to see freaking Zod and you know, that crap again in the next movie, because we've seen that already.
It's been done. Give us Brainiac. I would love to see an on-screen Brainiac.
I'm curious that if they had done a hard reboot of Superman like they did with Batman, would it have been better, you know? Do you think it would have been better?
I sort of wish they would have, to tell you the truth, because they had look at how much money they had to spend on this movie. And the unlimited resources that they had, almost, they could have done anything.
He punched nothing.
He punched a hole through the wing of the plane.
Oh, whoopty frickin' dude.
Other than that, yeah.
He pulled a lot of things, and he shot lasers, but he punched nothing.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in an eight. Like I said, I was just disappointed with that film just because we've seen it all before. So if he gives me something new in that new movie, I will be there. But, and we also said this before, that the second movies are always the best, right?
Yeah.
X-Men 2 was the better of the three. Spider-Man 2 is the better of the first one, so...
Batman Returns is better than Batman? Are you sure?
Let's go back to Batman.
I used to think Batman Returns was the better one, but actually when they came out on DVD, I watched them back to back, and I must say that I enjoyed Batman a lot better than Batman Returns.
Really?
I have to say that, we've gone into this before in our movie special episode, but I was like 18 when that first one came out, and all I have to say is the Bat Dance.
The Bat-Toosie?
No, that's not the same.
I know.
A Bat Dance. Whoever thought of a Prince soundtrack for a Batman movie should have their head, I don't know.
It was the 80s. A lot of things that were
Blue Beetle,
of
that's
not
all
have
I have to say.
They should have had him as the villain, that's why. They should have had Prince as one of the villains in one of his purple suits. Oh, that would have worked perfectly.
A henchman, at least.
Oh, yeah.
I was surprised he wasn't in that movie at all.
One thing that the second movies have done so far is they've had a better budget than the first movies. This is not going to happen here with Superman Returns. They're saying that Superman Returns is going to be limited to about, I think they said, $170 million.
But don't they have a lot of the same sets and things that they can reuse?
Yeah,
they don't have the
I don't
same,
think it's the
I
budget.
Hope, yeah.
I don't think it's the budget. I think it's the fact that you've already got the origins. They all say this, so I could just be copying them, but they've already got the origin story out of the way. They can assume everyone's seen the movie if they're coming. They've seen the first one if you're coming for the second one, so now you can do whatever you want. And that's where Superman Returns failed. He had to retell the origin in some form instead of just scrapping it and making it like a sequel. Because he had his head so far up Donner's ass to worship him.
But if you look at Superman Returns, he actually didn't spend that much time on the origin story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just think he blew it. I mean, he had a golden opportunity to make a brand new film. And just like you said, he's so concerned with redoing the original that I think it really hampered him.
If all he had was Marlon Brando as Jor-El and then went in a totally different direction, it would have been fine. Because then it would have been set in the same continuity, but he had to go back and reference everything that it just didn't work.
I'm still very annoyed that they took out the scene in space where he actually, visits the remains of Krypton, as it were. Because I heard that's supposed to be one of the best damn...
I saw pictures of that on the internet, and I'm going, where is that? Why wasn't that in the film?
It's going to be included in the DVD, because they originally were going to release two separate DVDs. One that sucked, and one that was going to have all the extras.
I hate that. Like X-Men 3?
But they eventually decided at the last second, okay, wait a minute, nobody's going to buy this if we pull that, because it's not like... Well, I have the crappy version of Sin City that has barely any extras.
I waited.
Yeah. The extra edition, the super mega hyper edition, had all the deleted scenes and all that. All I got was one feature, whoop-de-frickin-do, But they're not going to do that with Superman Returns. Instead, they're going to just release one edition with all the deleted scenes and all the extras because they feel the movie did not do well enough for them to warrant two separate editions of it. So,
X3 is going to have three different editions. It has your regular single disc. It has your regular single disc with extra packaging and a crappy comic, and then it's going to have the special edition with all the extras coming out probably by Christmas time or something.
Oh, God.
One for each number in the sequel.
Well, I am going to have to wait to buy X3 then.
I waited because I knew they were going to come out with another one. I'm waiting to buy the King Kong DVD because they're coming out with an extended version of that, and it's going to be better than the one they released.
Do we really need to listen to the commentary track or something on X-Men 3? I'm almost at a point right now where I don't care about that stuff anymore. I'm not going to wait around to buy it.
I didn't listen to commentaries. I buy it for the actual features, but I just put the commentaries on if I'm doing homework.
I know what you're talking about. I'm just saying, a lot of this extra stuff that you get on the DVD, I'm one of those kind of people too where I don't want a bare bones DVD, but, I don't know. What was the point of that? Do we need to see three? Why do they have alternate endings on a film anyway?
Well,
shouldn't they know how
question.
It ends before they start filming it?
Watch. All three of those alternate endings are going to be better than the actual ending to the film. I guarantee you. Because, I 100% guarantee you with this statement, because they've done this so many times before with the alternate endings. There have been plenty of movies that have come out with alternate endings where you go, they chose the crappy one.
like what?
Well, okay. Okay, well, there was one, oh man, there was one movie very, very recently that came out where that had about like 7 alternate endings or something like that, and like all 7 of them were like better than the other one. The name of the movie is completely escaping me here, but it was blanking on the name here. I wish I could remember it. I'm losing myself here when I'm talking
anyway, about it. Anyway, next.
Yeah.
The only alternate ending that I can remember that I really liked, the spoilers, Butterfly Effect, if you've seen the director's cut, mm-hmm. instead of going back in time and ignoring him, he kills himself in his mother's womb.
Oh,
that was
nice.
Love right there. Give up your own life for some stupid blonde. Come on.
Hey, well, I still love the alternate ending to Clerks, okay, where
the guy
obviously
shot.
Yeah, he gets shot. That's it. You know, that's the end, period. That was the original ending when it first got released in, you know, the film festivals. That was the ending it had when they said, you can't use this because we might want to make sequels.
Gee, but then you could have never had that next one 20 years later.
Ah, damn. What a shame. Although Clerks 2 was great, but that's another story for another day. All right. Moon Knight might be coming to television, and Kevin from Comic Geek Speak is in convulsions on the floor in ecstasy.
I bet
he knows what's good for him. He won't care.
Yeah. All right. This could work. It might not. I don't know, because wasn't Mark Spector introduced in the Blade series anyway?
They referenced him.
It was name dropped. That was it.
Oh, okay. All right.
But you know
right.
what? So again, let's put this out there that this is a one paragraph announcement that appeared in Variety, which basically means nothing. It means that they've started to think about maybe doing it.
Yeah.
And as I said before, you know, NBC they're seeing some success with Heroes this season, but you know, they did just cancel Blade after a few episodes. So
Blade was getting better. I liked Blade.
I don't know. If they do it, you know, the way it sounded in the one sentence description that we had, it talked about Mark Spector, and then it talked about, you know, becoming the Egyptian god of vengeance or something like that. And, you know, I don't know. Definitely if it does get made, it's not going to be anything like the comic. It's not going to be a guy in a silver suit.
It'll be like the Mummy.
It's going to be Mark Spector going after werewolves. It's just going to be like Supernatural, but with a weird twist.
Pretty much.
Probably. And definitely very probably, you know, costume light.
Well, what I want to know is what happened to this Brother Voodoo they were supposed to be doing Once Upon a Time, you know? I mean, they had planned that for Sci-Fi Channel and completely, you know, ignored it after that.
No, that's why people get so worked up about these announcements. They don't mean anything. Until it shows up on a pilot or a schedule somewhere, I wouldn't worry
like
about it.
Episode 2 of Comic Timing, I think it was, we talked about the Skrull Kill Crew coming to TV, there's been nothing about that, because that was part of the deal with Spike TV. Spike TV was thinking about making a Skrull Kill Crew. We never heard anything after that, so...
Spike just TV because it was is gone. Yeah. You should just cancel that from your cable. If they can't keep Blade, which was their one good show, the one original show, then they're not going to be a successful TV network. Okay, what do they have? Bond Marathons,
Star Trek
Stupid 2.0 Scream Awards...
No, that's G4.
Oh, nope. Sorry. And they're going out of business, too.
Well, they do have it. They did have it on Spike for a while.
Yeah.
But Blade was the only original show. I'm not counting Ultimate Fighter because that's not original. That's reality.
Hey. And Stripperella. Stripperella. There we go. No.
Cartoon. God, didn't last. No. Didn't last.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Although Gary the Rat was fantastic.
Didn't last. Didn't last.
I know.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, no. It was great, man. Come on. Kelsey Grammer as a rat? I mean, that's brilliant.
They should make Spike. If you don't like a pilot, send it over to Spike. They'll make it for a season, and then it'll end. So they should make the Aquaman series then.
Well, see, now I just want to make one where, like, I'm in my basement, like, around, like, my dryers and my, like the dryers and the washing machines and just, you know, like, hitting myself on the head with a wall, you know? That would be 13 episodes right there on
Spike.
Well,
I'd pay to see that.
Oh, great.
Anyway.
Oh, God.
So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. You know, again, not to beat a dead Moon Knight, but...
A
lot of people, this is a comic series right now that a lot of people are... They just cannot stand it, and I don't know what the numbers are like. I don't know what the sales are. I know there are some people that like it.
He left his house.
Well, yeah,
it's
after 5 issues.
it's like, I mean, Batman and Robin getting to the Batcave in All-Star.
This is Moon Knight's always been a character to me that is totally... He's much cooler in concept than in reality. They've never really been able to capture... or bring this character back in any significant way since the original run. They keep trying, and they just don't know what to do with him.
Because he's a Batman knockoff, and Batman does it better.
Well, don't say that on the forum, but...
Well, because he has so many split personalities, they never know which one to go with.
That's interesting. I mean, see, people, they don't play off that original version.
That's what the Sentry's doing now with his personalities. That's the Sentry now. They can't do it with Moon Knight.
Well, I like in the Ultimate Universe where one of his personalities is like this little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not gonna work. That sounds really terrible. I'm glad I'm not reading that book, to tell the truth.
But it was in one issue.
Anyway.
It was in one issue.
But you know what? It's just a character. I hate to say it, he's always been a Marvel B-lister.
Yeah.
They can't figure out a way to make him cool and really stand out on his own.
Hey, Marvel Knights was one of the best series that he was in.
I think
honestly.
B-lister is too high for Moon Knight. The first I heard of Moon Knight was when I was reading Universe X, and he was in there for one issue. I had not heard of him until they brought out this new series.
When I first started collecting comics in the 80s, I got on board the second volume where they relaunched him as the Fist of Khonshu, where he had all this gold Egyptian crap on his belt and stuff. That's when I got on board with it, and I tracked down a few of the other back issues. But, you know, again, that series, when I was 15-something, it was okay. I don't know. I didn't love the character. I don't think there's anything that really makes him that special. No one's ever kind of gotten him or made
him. I just kind of see him as a man in a white sheet, so he might as well be a Ku Klux Klan member. That's how much I care.
That's why he needs to be silver, exactly.
That's so stupid. Silver or white? Silver or white?
Well, Brent, I'm just glad to be not the youngest on this episode for
once. I'm only 20. I'm sorry. I'm relatively new, but I've been reading since Hush came out. So.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. No. I think
is becoming our catchphrase at this point. I don't know. There's at least one "oh snap" per episode.
I stole it from My Name Is Earl, and I know that they do it ironically on there anyway. So,
I haven't said my catchphrase since like episode one, Geekgasm. There we go.
Oh okay,
continue.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I should have kept
that's
that.
That's why that one stinks.
I know you have a couple other things, and if you don't mind, I wanted to bring something up.
Go ahead.
That was in the news this week, and see what you guys think about this.
By all means.
Did you see this thing? How Marvel supposedly sent out a letter to their artists telling them not to swipe,
yes,
not to swipe panels anymore.
Greg Land's dead. It's all over.
Did you listen to that Inker interview on Comic Geek Speak other day?
No, I didn't.
The Inker they interviewed had worked with Greg Land, and he actually admitted that Greg Land does swipe stuff or like does photo reference it a lot.
Wow.
Well, yes, I don't know. I don't want to get into this whole Greg Land battle with people.
That's
but you know what?
Yeah.
My concern is that, you know, I like sausages. I don't care how they're made. If it comes out and it tastes good, then, you know, I don't need to go to the sausage factory and start grinding up.
Are you Judge Judy, man? That was totally Judge Judy right there.
If it works.
Don't give me a sausage and say it's a bathroom.
If I like. Okay, if I like it, I don't care how it's made. But my point is, let's get back to that idea, though, because as has come up in these debates many times when people are talking about Greg Land, you know, classic artist Wally Wood was always quoted as saying, you know, don't draw what you can steal from anyone. And apparently Marvel is doing this just for fear that they might possibly get sued by someone over this. Now, I wonder, I don't know what the law is on that or how that works.
But what are they referring to? Are they referring to photographs of, like, landscapes or backgrounds of, like, New York since it's Marvel? Are they referring to people?
I think what they're referring to are actual scenes from movies that have been taken and put into actual comics. Well, I mean, I'll give you an example here. When Land was doing Ultimate Fantastic Four, and again, we don't want to just talk about Land here, but this is just an example here. There was one shot of Magneto putting on his helmet that was straight from Troy, Brad Pitt putting on his helmet. That was the exact same shot, and Magneto looked just like Brad Pitt in that one shot. He didn't for the rest of the issue, mind you, but for that one shot, he looked like Brad Pitt.
But that's the thing. So, I mean, this is what I want to know, because I don't know the reality of the whole situation, you know, as far as the legality of it. Now, I know that certain people, like if you take a photograph as a professional photographer and you copyright that image, that and then if somebody appropriates that somehow, then I guess that you could sue them. In some fashion, but again, this seems like a real legal gray area, and maybe that they're just trying to hedge their bets. I don't know, just to not have any problems. I don't know if it's come up yet, or they've gotten legal action, or told to stop, or something like that. But it's a gray area, and again, you know, people are referencing characters. I don't want to know. I don't want characters to look like anyone. I don't want superhero characters to freaking look like Samuel L. Jackson.
Honestly, that is the one that I like too.
It takes you out of the book. There's no reason for it. It's just kind of annoying that it's.
I see Mace Windu as Nick Fury. I see Mace Windu as Nick Fury, nothing else.
No, I see him as the snakes on the plane guy, actually.
I see snakes on a plane as Nick Fury on a plane.
No, but I see it as Mace Windu on a plane, so. We have a triangle.
Okay, wow. We're going into categories here that I didn't think.
Anyway, but you know what? The point of that is, I mean, again, I don't know, and you can argue how widespread this is or not, and what the issues are or what their liabilities are. I don't know. I just find it kind of interesting that's come up. And again, why is this necessary? I think it has to do with a lot of people are. We demand this sort of photorealistic, highly detailed style.
I don't demand
in
it.
In comics. Well, a lot of people do. You look at the top top books and the top artists right now, that's the style of the day. The Hitch,
I'll have Humberto Ramos any day.
You got your McNiven, your Hitch, your other big selling books. They're all, drawing every single pebble on the ground and all these different things. And that's what you're leading into. You cannot, if you want to have a monthly book, you're going to have to cut some kind of corners, and I guess that's one of the ways they've been cutting corners.
Well, that's one problem that I've actually found, that actually, minus the Samuel L. Jackson thing, the thing that actually takes me out of it is when characters look like, say, I don't want the Invisible Woman to look like Kirsten Dunst. And I've seen things like that. I've seen Jean Grey look like, movie stars that really, she doesn't look like, period, I've seen people draw Wolverine looking like Hugh Jackman ever since the X-Men movies came out. Wolverine has always looked one specific way. If you're using photo references for Wolverine, I mean, come on, it's Wolverine. You don't really need to do that. There's about 12,000, comics out there with him in it that all look one way. If yours looks like Hugh Jackman, there's a problem there. Unless you're doing an X-Men movie comic, which chances are you're not. So there's no reason to do the photo references.
I think what the whole issue is about, I think it's more, it's not about, we're talking about images of people from films, like the Magneto thing you were talking about, or Kirsten Dunst, because those are actors and you're associating, now that you're reading a comic, if you're seeing Kirsten Dunst, and maybe you're reading like an X-rated comic or whatever, I don't know, you're reading something from Vertigo where Kirsten Dunst is being mutilated, that's not good for Kirsten Dunst's image. So I think it's more about that than it is about, like backgrounds and stuff. Because how many shots of New York are there? A million. And so chances are you're going to get something that looks similar to something else.
Oh, of course. Yeah, definitely.
So I think it's more about these actors and actresses that are present or something.
Yeah.
I wonder, I know like in some cases we've had covers of magazines that have been,
Gen 13 and the Rolling Stone.
And that kind of thing. And the photographer who made that, shot, could, I guess, say, hey, that's a copyrighted image. You can't copy that without my permission. I don't know. I guess maybe they're just, like I said, they're trying to head it off before it actually starts.
Well, question, is this applying just to, the movies and stuff like that, or is this also applying to artists that swipe from other artists in comics? Because you've had a couple of images that have popped up recently that were stolen from other artists. And, I mean, it's happened all over the years. I mean, I'll give you an example here. I mean, years ago, Liefeld, in an X-Force issue, did an entire page straight from a, George Perez Teen Titans issue. This is the sort of thing that doesn't just happen in the world of movies. There is actual art that's been drawn before, which is being drawn again without the permission of the artist. So what the hell?
Yeah, that's a different area, though, when you're getting into stuff like Marvel Comics, work for hire. If those people don't own their own artwork, then, I mean, can they really say anything about it? It does come across, and one of the things that they mentioned in the letter is that it comes across as lazy. It comes across, it leaves a bad impression.
Yeah.
In people's minds, and that's another one of the things that they're trying to get away from, this whole fury over that swipe files and this and that. And it drives me crazy that people sit around and spend like 20 hours a day trying to spot Greg Land's photo references.
I don't mind, like, what you're talking about, the Liefeld. He wasn't copying the characters, he was just copying the poses. And how many great poses can you have, I mean, there are a couple of iconic poses, and anything else is not going to look as good as the other ones,
But what about guys who take stuff? I know that there was a recent image drawn. I forget who actually drew it, but there was a Greg Horn drawn image of, I think it was Hellcat, that was then copied, and it was pretty much the exact same image of Hellcat, only it was a different character. They took the pose, they took the face and everything, and just drew a different costume on it. This is the sort of thing that does happen in the world of comics.
You know, again, to me, that's
bad.
But even so, you say, well, that's bad, but who cares? I mean, what is, as a comic reader,
I don't.
Is your enjoyment any less than that? I mean, I think that part of it's sort of like, people get sour grapes when this comes up. Part of the reason why I think people are so furious about guys like Greg Land and other people that do this, and you've seen on the, you remember on the Comic Geek Speak forum that there was a huge thread about that, and we had basically Peter Rios saying that he could do exactly what Greg Land does, and that's kind of the problem. It's like, you know, it's not as easy as people think it is, but I think that what it does is it makes us sit back and say, okay, these guys are quote unquote superstars.
It lessens the value of their work that we analyze it so much.
Well, and also, I mean, it makes us feel like, you know, we know the magician's tricks. It feels like it's cheating in some way. But, you know, again, ultimately, if you see it, if you're looking at it, if you're looking at a piece of art, you know, again, does it kind of bother me? It annoys me, and it's kind of cheap that somebody copies someone else. But
does it annoy you when you're reading the comic, or does it annoy you when you know about it? Because
if
you're reading the comic,
you
don't notice it.
Exactly.
I mean, you're not going to look at it and go, oh, that looks like, if you're reading the Magneto thing, I'm sure that you read it and you didn't go, oh, that looks just like from Troy, but until someone actually looked for it and pulled it next to you, you went, oh, that's bad. But when you're reading it, you don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, the minute that I read that issue where he drew that Troy image, I recognized it right away, and I haven't even seen Troy. All I saw was the coming attraction, and it was in the trailer, that exact scene with him putting on the helmet, and I was like, okay, that's Brad Pitt. That's not cool.
Well, he's special.
Yeah.
but, you know, I don't care. You know, I'll enjoy the hot dog, you know, just fine, but if you tell me the rat feces content later, then I'll be...
Whoa!
But otherwise...
Okay, now we have officially lost our mind.
Futurama reference, actually.
Oh, nice. How did I not realize that? Okay, which episode is that?
The Poplar episode. Where we're
playing. Oh, there we go.
Up our glasses at the same time now.
Anyway.
Yes, there we go. All right, Next Wave is no longer an ongoing. This obviously could tie very well into the fact that Stuart Immonen is now doing the art for Ultimate Spider-Man, but I love Next Wave.
Never read it.
I feel it's one of the best things that Warren Ellis is putting out these days.
I read the first issue and thought it was not as clever as it thought it was. And you know what?
Okay.
In preparation for the story, I looked at the newest issue that came out this week, and I got to tell you that I wanted to throw it in the fire trying to read all that crap upside down. It really drove me.
What?
It just...
See, I haven't read this week's issue yet, so now I'm incredibly curious as to what the hell you're talking about.
There's a stupid castle that floats up. It's like floating on a cloud or something, but it's floating upside down. And so all the dialogue bubbles and all this crap and every character is like upside down on the page. And it drove me freaking insane.
Is that like the Spawn book where you had to turn it sideways to see the splash page?
It's hard to explain it, man, because you're not supposed to turn it around, I don't think, but it's just...
Oh my god, yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
It makes
your
eyes hurt.
There's entire, the dialogue is the right way, but the characters are upside down. That's really, really weird. They've never pulled anything like this in Next Wave before, but you know, it's a pure parody comic.
Right.
I mean, they're not trying to say that this is, you know, anything other than parody, but at the same time, that could get irritating for some people. Mind you, it doesn't really bother me that much because I'm used to Warren Ellis being Warren Ellis, and this entire series is just basically, hi, I'm Warren Ellis. What could I do next?
Mm-hmm.
this is him not giving a crap.
But how long can one parody comic go on? I mean, it's like a bad improv sketch going on for 20 minutes when it should have ended in the first two.
Well, again, it depends on who's reading it. If you're a fan of Ellis, you know, I'm sure that you're liking the book. He's trying to poke fun at some aspects of the Marvel Universe. You know, like he has the hate agency, you know, just poking fun of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's has sort of a Venture Brothers kind of knocking superheroes sort of vibe at certain times. And
I think Nick Fury's name is Dick Anger or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And like I said, I only read the first issue, and it has a really weird collection of characters that are part of this group, like freaking Boom Boom and, I don't know, like the black female Captain Marvel. and some other weird characters in there. That
Machine Man. Machine Man's
that are
in it.
Pretty,
and
like you said, CB-level lister characters.
Elsa Bloodstone. Yeah. Actually, pretty much all the guys that we just mentioned, plus one new guy called the Captain. And the reason why his name is the Captain is because he tried calling himself all these other Captain names, and they were all taken, so he just settled on the Captain.
Well, no, he said, my name's Captain, like, Fuck or something, and then Captain America beat the shit out of him and threw him in a dumpster.
Well, it's not only that. There were also a whole bunch of other, like, in a later issue, he explains that he tried Captain Marvel, but that was taken. He tried Captain Atom, but that was some other company, and, you know, he tried all these other Captains, and it just couldn't work, so he just settled on the Captain eventually.
The only thing I've seen of Next Wave that I thought was funny was the Uncivil War cover. Mark Miller licks goats or something. Please love us.
Well, also, Fing Fang Foom put you in his pants.
just the signs they're holding up made me laugh, but I haven't read anything about that.
That one line will always, you know, I'm never going to forget that line. Fing Fang Foom puts you in his pants.
But if you love it so much, go back and reread the comic two or three times, you know? I mean, start over from issue number one and read one a month. It'll never end.
Well, they're going to be doing miniseries. They're going to be doing miniseries of it, limited runs
Then hope you finish rereading it by the miniseries comes out.
Read
the miniseries and then start over and go from there, and it'll never end.
And then if Stuart Immonen or Immonen, whatever, is doing, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man, I'm assuming that he's not going to be able to do that unless he works his magic somehow.
They have been saying that he might actually end up doing this, but obviously not that many. Let's put it that way.
They'll have one, maybe one. Maybe it'll be like a one shot, like this Choosing Sides thing or something.
That's the reason why they say that Next Wave is not continuing, because Warren Ellis didn't want to do it without Stuart Immonen. So he had the opportunity to continue it, but he's just not going to. And there you go. But
I think
also
that's smart, though. I mean, Warren Ellis knows what works for that book, and it's obviously him and his artist. And if he doesn't think another artist can duplicate it, then he says, well, then I'm not going to throw out some crap comic. I mean, I think other creators need to take that stand
with
their
comics. What I heard it differently, I guess, is that that they said that the reason why that they're going to this format is simply because the monthly issues are selling for garbage, but the trade is selling really well.
And has the trade come out yet?
The first trade, actually the hardcover came out.
So that's what they're aiming at, is doing like miniseries that can be instantly turned into trade paperbacks to get the sales up.
And at the same time, the hardcover is gorgeous.
Can we discuss
the paper they use on it?
Can we discuss
fantastic.
The trade versus hardcover thing? I mean, why do we need a hardcover and then a trade at the same time? Why can't we just have a trade with nice paper come out? Why do we have to have a hardcover or an oversized hardcover?
Because then that would cost as much money as the hardcover, and they want to be able to milk people into, you know, buying the hardcover before the trade
comes
out. But
I don't want to pay $25 for a 6-issue hardcover.
Well, yeah, then the trade will come out eventually.
But there's 10,000 other fanboys that will.
Yeah,
because that's the thing. It's just like, why do they come out with hardcover paper? You know, hardcover novels. Because there's always going to be that group of people that are going to pay the $30 for the book instead of waiting the 8 months and get it for $6. I don't know.
Barnes & Noble, every time a hardcover book comes out, it's always like 20% off. Then why don't they do it that way then?
Well,
to get you to buy the hardcover.
Or in-stock trades, I guess.
Yeah,
depends, but that's across the board all over the country, though. What I'm saying, a book comes out, it says $24.95 on the hardcover. Like Angels and Demons or Da Vinci Code was out for so long, and it was 30 or 40% off for so long until the paperback came out.
Well, again, that's just based on the retailer, and that's the retailer's option. And there's certain retailers in the comic industry. You know, there's no one that has that kind of buying power except for the online places like In-Stock Trades or Amazon or wherever. So, you know, if you want to get that stuff for 20, 30, however many percent off, you can find it out there usually.
Definitely.
I mean, I know that a lot of, like, the Absolutes editions, whatever, from DC, a lot of those were like 30, 40% off when they first were solicited. And, but, you know, again, I don't know. I agree. I'm not buying them. I'm not paying that kind of money for books, but.
Yeah.
Ian, have you?
But there are people that do.
I'm very much considering buying the Infinite Crisis hardcover because of the changes that were made in it, and also the fact that it's $16 on In-Stock Trades.
What about the Absolutes? So, have you any of those?
I haven't picked up any of the Absolutes. I'm tempted to pick up Absolute Watchmen eventually, but that happens once I get a job, because there's no way in hell I'm buying that when I'm, you know, jobless, because that's money that just I cannot spend when I have Watchmen sitting. Yeah, but that's also the fact that I have the Watchmen trade sitting on my shelf. You know, I'm okay with that for now, but I'd love to eventually have that in a, you know, giant size edition that they're going to be putting out. So.
Yeah, that's kind of silly.
I think $100 is a little too steep, though.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's again, but that's why everybody that, you know, everybody you talk to is like, oh yeah, I bought it for half off on nice, you know, in stock trades or blah, blah, blah. I've never heard anybody say, yeah, I paid full retail for that.
Yeah, I paid $20 more at Joe's Books Emporium, and I loved it. Yeah,
that's part of the problem.
I haven't seen any bookstores carrying them except I think Borders. I saw a couple.
There's actually I think the Kingdom Come Absolute Edition is being sold at Barnes & Noble. Last time I was there, that they had a couple of those there, but that's really it.
Well, that's one that maybe warrants a purchase, but like Watchmen, I don't see warranting a purchase, or Sandman, maybe Crisis on Infinite Earths, I could see warranting a purchase, but like New Frontier, the Absolute of New Frontier, I just bought that in trade, and I read it, and I thought it was great, but I don't see it warranting an Absolute edition.
Too soon.
I was disappointed. Yeah, it's too soon, and I was disappointed that it was only 6 issues. Why did I buy two trades for 6 issues? That's the other thing. But like, his art is great, but there's not enough detail to warrant an Absolute edition. I mean,
yeah, making
there's
that
little
bigger,
enough
really
in there.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really, yeah. Although I am anxiously awaiting the animated. That's going to be really great, the animated feature they're making out of that.
That is going to be cool.
Yeah, it really, really is.
I hope.
Any other... what were we going to say?
I know, I was hoping that the Superman Doomsday... I read the Superman Doomsday trade, and I hope they go Death of Superman and not the Superman Doomsday trade.
I think they're doing Death of Superman. I'm almost positive that's what they said that they were going to do. So, because if it is Superman Doomsday, I 100% agree with that statement. It's good, but it's not really worth an animated. So, you know, I mean, it's Jurgen style though. But I don't know. I'd much rather see the Death of Superman just played out in an animated movie. So, we came close though once with that Justice League arc, but that was just him being sent to the far future and Lobo involved. So. Man.
You know,
I wish they were longer than 70 minutes.
Plot device.
Yeah.
That character is so boring and lame, and it existed for no purpose other than to serve the plot to kill Superman.
You know, I didn't like Death of Superman when I read it, because all it was 5 issues of Superman fighting Doomsday, and all Doomsday said was, "Blarg, Metropolis." and then a few punches, and then again, "Blarg."
Well, that was great. Good. You could play him in the animated movie. That's
yeah.
Perfect.
And they started him off. If you remember, this like the first issue, he was in this weird ass green bodysuit with little goggles on his face, and then eventually, like kept ripping off more of his clothes.
Yeah, he looked like Ambush Bug at first.
Crazy looking.
Who is Ambush Bug? The first comic I read of him was that 52 thing. What the hell is Ambush Bug?
Ambush Bug is a character that was created by Keith Giffen in a sort of a humor comic. And he's basically Giffen's love child, as it were. I mean, basically Giffen has done everything with him up until now, and this is really the first time he showed up since the Ambush Bug series.
I mean, it's just, I haven't read all the issues, but it's just, again, it's kind of a parody, you know, sort of...
Similar to Next Wave that didn't last as long?
Well, just more, maybe more along the lines of The Tick and stuff like that, a little more
Yeah, it's actually
wacky.
A lot like The Tick. Yeah, it's very much like The Tick when you think about it, so... Yeah, although it does have a little touch of the Next Wave humor in it, but it's nothing like it's humorous, but it's not like incredibly over the top humor. It's Keith Giffen style. So if you like Keith Giffen, pick it up. That's the way that rolls. So I think it's traded. I'm almost positive it is. So yeah, but any other stories you guys wanted to touch on, or should I just head on?
Do you have anything else?
Comments? Yeah, I had a couple comments I wanted to read that people posted on the forums for episode 20B. So wanted to get into that. And by the way, thanks to everybody for actually participating in that, David D and John Mayo. Giant 52 discussion, and I like being able to cut things up into 2 episodes because when it's that long. So
yeah, why don't you do that for that Dorkin interview?
You know what? It's fine as it is, buddy. It's fine as it is. That one is that one goes into the annals right there.
Man.
So, although actually it is our most downloaded episode. So
really,
how about? Yep, it is as
for
of now.
3 hours.
Our most downloaded
wow, that's
episodes.
Pretty impressive.
Yes, it is.
I wonder if anybody's
out,
made it through the end.
I made it through the end, but I can't say I actually listened to the whole thing.
Oh, okay, all right. But hey, what'd you think, buddy?
Me of where Aaron Dorkin?
Yeah. What'd you think of it? What'd you think of that episode? You like it? Good stuff. Yeah.
I can't really say. I remember who the hell he was or what the hell he did. But, I listened to it. I remember more from the 52 episode than I did Aaron Dorkin.
All right.
Okay. Evan. Okay.
There
that
you
works.
Go.
But
bringing
endorsement. Let's put that on the web.
Yeah. We're gonna. Yeah. Comic timing. It's all right.
I can't remember what happened.
On the back.
Yeah. Oh man. But we're gonna have some more creators on as time goes on. We've got some in the pipeline that we might be getting in. And if Steve Bryan is ever free, we'll hopefully have him on.
The Lost episode.
I hope you shouldn't
give that a number. Just title it the Lost episode.
It is at this point, because it was going to be episode 20, but we did episode 20. So now it's just comic timing. The Lost episode featuring Steve Bryan.
And Ian wrecked it. We sat there for like 2 hours talking, doing this interview. And I was even sick, I think, that day.
Yeah, you were.
And then
you
freaking gets it all out of sync and everything.
Hey, that's my computer's fault, not mine. All right. But anyway, we've got some comments here from episode 20B that I wanted to read, starting off with Draza. Whoa, just now finished listening to both parts, and while it was an incredibly geeky time, I must say I loved it. I look forward to each issue of 52, but listening to you guys and the other forumites dissect and speculate on each little part multiplies the entertainment value I get out of it by a factor of 10. Keep coming with the crackpot theories. They're great. So thank you, Draza, for that statement. And we're going to have one at the end of 52. I'm going to try and get David D. and John Mayo back on for that one. And Matt, I forget, are you reading 52?
I have a pile that have not been read.
You should be.
Yeah.
You know what? See, this is the thing with that. And again, you know, everyone, I guess you can say I'm just an old crank or whatever. But
yes,
all my favorite characters. Basically, I've watched all my favorite characters get killed in this last, like, Infinite Crisis 52 thing. And, you know, each issue I pick up, it's like, oh, okay, they killed another one of my favorite characters. Oh, okay, now Booster Gold's dead. Oh, okay, now Beetle's got his head blown off. Okay, I don't know. I'm going to wait and see what happens at the end.
I have
end
a remedy for you for that problem.
I know
what it is.
Read it. That's what I'm not doing.
Go back and reread your old comics.
No, it's boring.
Go back and reread it. Ooh. If it's boring, then why do you love it so much?
Because I already read it once.
Well,
you can only read it once to get excited.
Do you remember everything that happens?
Oh,
if you go back and read them,
I remember every single panel ever.
You're not Peter Rios. You can't remember everything. If you go back and read
that, you are so made. You are so made of crap right now.
I have a photographic memory. I have like my entire freaking Keith Giffen JLA issues here. I can tap any panel page. Give me a reference.
But nevertheless, Mister, I have remembered everything ever since the first issue I've ever read ever. You'll hopefully be joining us for the second half.
Well,
52
I'll see if I can get caught up.
So.
I flip through them and I kind of look at what the major events are. I don't read them every page, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
but,
I think that's going to be great to read in one fell swoop.
Oh God! Well, we discussed a little bit on the episode about you know what format we'd like the trades to be in, and that's going to be in at least four.
An
or five
omnibus.
I would like
I
it to be
issue.
In one trade.
There you go.
For $1 million.
No. Just do it like they're doing.
Trade.
Do it like they're doing the Witchblade trades in the 50 issues, one trade, $50. Do it that way.
All right. That could work. That could work.
If it's a hardcover, probably soft cover, probably a hardcover to begin with. But 50 issues, $50. Do it like that, and then you can put the origins in the back or in a separate thing if you want.
I think in one trade
it would work.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what they end up doing. So, once again, Dan DiDio, if you're listening, why are you listening? Okay, this one is from Mobile Home. Man, I wish I were a DC fan. Sounds like some great stuff for 52 readers. Nice job dissecting/analyzing the events. I take comfort in the knowledge that due to the podcast Equal Time Doctrine, which I just made up, you're obliged to afford equal airtime to Marvel. And that one's from Mobile Home. And I think we did a good job of that on this episode, because most of the stuff was Marvel-based, except for the Superman Returns and the Wildstorm stuff, so that one was good enough there. So I hope we actually filled your requirements.
Yeah, that's,
there,
that's,
Mobile
that's
Home.
That's pretty dedicated of a listener to listen to two episodes of something he doesn't even read. That's not too bad.
Hey, well, also at the same time, I gotta thank Mobile Home. Is actually, he's the guy who's going to be driving me over to CES episode 200 events. So we're all going to cram ourselves into a car and rent the car and get it all done there. So Mobile Home, thank you very much for suggesting that.
Yeah, look out for
and
tornadoes,
to see
dude.
Oh, yeah. Wait, tornadoes in Pennsylvania? Well, that could happen, I guess. But I hope not, man. See, now you got me worried.
Right over your head, man.
Brilliant.
I just want to interject and celebrate. The Cardinals won the game they were playing at the beginning of the episode. So it's now 3-1, so I'm a little happy.
There we go. Yes, explain that to me.
No, if you explain it, it's lost. It's like Gossamer.
It's like Gossamer.
You can't dissect Gossamer.
We'll get comments from that eventually, I'm sure. So, all right. This one's from a new member of the forums. His name is Hauberk. I really enjoyed this one as well, though I will say that the more I think about it, the more 52 makes my head hurt. Pretty much the booster/supernova stuff. As a pleasant aside, the cast plus this forum has caused me to start looking at other pages. John, your vault is amazing. I really wish I had seen the drawer boxes years ago, as in, I'm in the midst of a large wooden shelf project to house my own collection. And that one is from Hobart. And John Mayo, yes, he has way, way, way too many drawer boxes, and they're taking over his home. So, amen to that. Oh, my God. He has a lot of those, man. Seriously.
Do you think he'll want to be buried in his comics?
That's a damn good question, actually. I don't know whether I want to know the answer to that.
They could turn it into a mausoleum. Instead of the coffins on the side, have the long boxes, and then have his coffin in the middle.
Huh, that could work.
And then you could turn it into a library, maybe. That's up to him, though.
John, we love you. We're not really planning your death. Okay. this one is from Castellan Snow. This one's actually the one that was for episode 20A. Just wrapping up 20A. Great episode. On Steel dying, I think that it's very likely. With Connor, the kid, dying in Infinite Crisis, Hawk Henshaw, the cyborg, apparently dying in the latest issue of Green Lantern, and Eradicator currently in a coma at Steelworks, it looks like DC is cleaning house on the replacement Superman. And I actually want to touch on that just for a minute here. I mean, do you feel that DC is trying to get rid of those replacement Supermen, or you think it's just a coincidence that, you know, Superboy's dead and Eradicator's in the middle of nowhere and you know, Cyborg is kaput.
I was going to say, I haven't been following the storyline, but, you know, DC, they seem to get these speculations. You know, the speculation was at the beginning, you know, they're trying to kill off all the members of the Giffen, you know, Justice League, which they've done pretty well so far, but you know, I don't know. Maybe they thought those characters were lame. They wanted to get rid of them. I don't know. It makes sense. It's a good time to do it if they want to,
I guess. What do you think, Brad?
I think that I kind of like Steel. Well, I don't like Steel being Steel now, you know, with his skin and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're really turning him for death. I think if anybody's going to die, it's going to be in 52. It's going to be Ralph. I think getting rid of Superboy was mainly a legal thing because of all the legal action that was going on. With the guys, the Seagulls and Schusters and all that.
Yeah, that's pretty petty of them to do that.
And I think the Green Lantern thing was just a coincidence, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might come back because if he was, now that I think about it, because in the early issues of Green Lantern, that Manhunter was there, right? And then they had the Manhunter mm-hmm. thing. So maybe he'll come back. Maybe that's like the long running story of the Jeff Johns Green Lantern comic.
Well, I mean, I like Steel as a character, period. So I'd actually hate to see him actually perish in 52. But I guess if it does further the story, then maybe that'll work. But I don't know. I mean, I've liked a lot of the characters that were introduced in that Reign of the Superman, even if Reign of the Superman was a bit silly in the first place. I mean,
really, you know what? I like the Superboy. To me, was the back in that time period before he became a Super Lex Boy or whatever he was, and started wearing jeans as his costume. I like that original series with the Tom Grummet art and stuff. I really like that character. The other three characters I always thought were pretty lame. You know, Steel, God bless him, but, you know, he's just a lame copy of the old American folktale of John Henry. It's
kind of cliche to give a black superhero.
It'd be like it'd be like having a, you know, some Minnesotan guy that turns big calling himself Paul Bunyan or something. I mean, it's just kind of, you know, it's just kind of.
Well, no, Paul Bunyan Irons.
That's Hank Pym's next identity.
Oh God!
Don't give me any ideas.
Well, he's had about 12 names over the years, so he hasn't gotten the Paul Bunyan.
And then
yet,
let's
he'll
not, you know, aside from Steel, I know this is not his fault, but come on, the Shaq thing. Let's just not tie that in there.
God. I want to know if they're releasing every bad Superman movie in a DVD set. Why isn't the Shaq movie in there too?
Yeah.
Well, see, no, they're gonna release a special edition. They're gonna release Shaq Fu for the PC along with Steel and Shazam.
Hey, that was
all
Super Nintendo.
In the same thing.
I like Shazam. I grew up on that movie. I like Shazam.
Kazam?
Kazam.
Kazam. Yeah, Kazam.
That was all Ian's fault.
Yes, exactly. That's totally my fault. But yeah, well, see, that's the problem. When I was a kid, I always called it Shazam for some reason instead of Kazam. But I don't know. It was Kazam, so you are.
Every time I walk into my comic shop, I cannot say Trials of Shazam for the life of me. I think I ruined it the other day.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe.
What do you say?
I walked in on Wednesday because they messed up my comic shop's order, so I didn't get Trials of Shazam 3. But I said Trials of Shazazazza, and I had to re-say it. I said Trials of Shazam. I said it like a putting emphasis on the Shazam.
That's okay.
Yeah,
Shazizzle or something.
Pile Shazam.
Who was that said that as a catchphrase? Who said that as a catchphrase?
Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Yeah.
Well, that
Gomer Pyle. Gomer Pyle.
Ian, you have your new catchphrase. Shazam!
There you go.
Oh, God, no. God, no. All right, I think before we, go into complete insanity here, we should probably end this one as, oh, my dear God. Well, this one's been the fun episode, to say the least, and Brent, you certainly gave that youthful feeling.
Oh,
come on, I'm just glad
you're not that
there's somebody younger than me for
you're
once.
Not that much
exactly.
Older.
I know. I'm two years older. But the fact is, I'm older.
Stay off my lawn.
Now you sound like John C. Dvorak, man.
Yeah, that's my role in life, to be the John C. Dvorak of comic book podcasts.
Oh, terrific. Brent, you don't have any podcasts, right?
No, but I do have an audio comment on Raging Bullets episode 28, part 2, coming up.
Well, you cannot be a member of the Comic Geek Speak forums without your own podcast.
I decided there are too many out there. I'll just keep popping up in other people's.
Don't forget to check out Just Bill's podcast at the JustBillLongBoxPodcast.com, as that one is a very, very popular podcast that I listen to every week. So, Just Bill's Long Box Podcast. Make sure to listen to that.
Speaking of ultra-popular podcasts, Ian, I have one to recommend to you.
Oh, really, Matt? And which one would this be?
Well, it's this awesome podcast that's dedicated to the NBC show The Office called That's...
Oh, really?
That's what she said.
Oh, really? And who's the host of this podcast?
It would be me, actually.
Huh.
Yeah.
How about that? And what are you doing this week for the off week?
You know what? I don't know what I'm doing yet. I got to think about it for a couple of days.
Retrospective.
You do have a couple of new deleted scenes.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to do that. And there's some news items, and there's some other things that have come out. The November 16th episode, if you haven't seen this, is actually going to be another 40-minute episode.
Oh.
So that's going to be when they're going to do all this stuff about Jim and the other branch and everything kind of happening. So. If you're a fan, if you want to check it out, I know I had one person, a guy by the name of Paul French, who wrote a message to me on that board saying that he followed me over from Comic Timing. So,
awesome.
Anybody else, fan of the show, come on over and check it out. Now, Ian, what do you think of those shows? Unbiased opinion?
Unbiased opinion of That's What She Said?
Yeah.
I've really been enjoying it, tell you the truth. I like the chemistry you have going with that other Ian. So you do a good job with Ian's, I guess. I guess so.
He asked me the other week, I cut this out, but he wanted to know which of you were the Karen and which was the Pam. And I refused to answer.
I came first, man. I kid. But no, Mr. French, by the way, thank you very much for listening to both That's What She Said and Comic Timing. So,
well, as long as you're
glad to have you as a listener.
As long as you're plugging podcasts, I post at aboutheroes.com. They've got their own podcast. About Heroes are pretty good. Listen to them. They're one of the first podcasts I started to. Good friends with them, so I want to give them a shout out. So go to www.aboutheroes.com and check them out too.
Awesome. I actually never listened to it, so I'll have to maybe give that a listen.
They're really
it's the
funny.
Competition. I think that's got to get edited out and.
Just because they're not on the forums with everybody else doesn't mean they're bad. They listen to your shows too, I guarantee you. At least CGS. Huh. I know they listen to CGS. They don't talk about anybody else, but I know they listen to CGS, which probably means they've heard about your show and everybody else's too.
Well, Brent, the fact of the matter is you're on this episode, so they're at least listening to this
hopefully.
One.
Hopefully.
So. Yeah,
tell them
exactly.
About it.
Oh, and we do have an announcement to make, actually, here. Well, along with the fact, as previously mentioned, we're going to be at the podcast arena where I battle Peter Rios to the death at New York Comic Con. But also, we have pretty much ironed out that there's going to be a crossover episode of Comic Timing between Comic Timing and Raging Bullets. The date has been unconfirmed as of yet. However, they are going to be on our 22 Pages episode for Superman Confidential. And in return, we're going to be on one of their episodes reviewing Batman Confidential. Ooh. And this is something that's going to be happening in the future. So the dates are up in the air as of now. We're not sure which episode is going to be what. But the Raging Bullets Comic Timing crossover is going to happen. More information forthcoming. And please make sure to pick up Superman Confidential as part of our 22 pages when it comes out on November 1st. As that is vastly approaching. That's next week.
I'm rubbing my hands furiously. I can't wait for that.
Awesome. Terrific. Well, glad that you're rubbing your hands furiously.
I love
for
you
that,
guys.
I guess. Okay. Anyway, let's just say that's heterosexual love and nothing
heterosexual
else.
Heterosexual man love. There you go.
There we go. It's all good. It's all good.
That's what
all
he right. said. Anyway.
Feelings aren't mutual on that side.
Dotlipson.com.
No, actually, that's what she said. Dotlipson.com.
Oh,
that's what he
okay,
said. I don't know what that might give you. I don't know. Like,
that's what she said. Dotlipson.com. That's what he said. I don't even want to.
That
know
might
what
be
that
a little
is,
bit different podcast. I don't know.
Exactly. Let's go into the credits here before my mind explodes. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. The previous podcast forum no longer exists. So please go to cgspodcast.com/forum to find the Comic Timing forums. They're graciously hosted, as always, by the Comic Geek Speak guys, but it's a brand new forum powered by PHPBB, so it's bound to be good. And so far, we got a couple posts on there already, so thanks, everybody, for posting. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And please send us your iTunes reviews over on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And once again, Comic Timing is brought to you by the New York Comic Con. Don't forget, the New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd and 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPGs, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guests of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, JMS, George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit NewYorkComicCon.com. That's NYComicCon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchases at NYComicCon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need, and thank God I got that out in time for the New York Comic Con, because I didn't think that was going to happen. Matt, thank you for joining us through all the insanity.
Sure.
And Brent, thanks for joining us for the first time. I'm sure you'll be back in the future.
I certainly hope so. Thanks. It was a pleasure. See, I'm acting like you now.
Oh, great. Terrific. Well, for everybody involved here, for Matt, for Brent, and for the forums, I'm Ian Levinstein, reminding everyone that there's always time for comics. You can also book your travel arrangement. You can also book your travel arrangement. I can't get words out. Here we go. You can also book your travel arrangement.
Oh, dude, you suck.
The word arrangement.
You can also book
just
your travel arrangements. There you go.
You can also book your travel arrangement.
Are you going for a hang? Are you being punished? Your travel arrangements.